Welcome back to the Devil Training Institute podcast, everyone. I'm Ross Thorburn. This week, my guest, Jonathan Newton from the University of Wellington in New Zealand, is going to talk to us about top-down and bottom-up listening skills. Jonathan has worked in language teaching and teacher education for more than 30 years. He's published a range of books, and one of the books he's published is called Teaching ESL/EFL Listening and Speaking, co-authored with former podcast guest Paul Nation. So on today's episode, you'll hear Jonathan quickly defining what are top-down and bottom-up skills and how they interact with each other, how teachers can combine those top-down and bottom-up skills when they teach listening, and why teaching listening skills can make learning English more interesting for students. Okay, enjoy the episode. Hi, Jonathan. To begin with, I wanted to ask you about the two ways we normally think about students understanding something that they're listening to. So that's top-down skills, so things like predicting and listening for global meaning, and then bottom-up skills, which is understanding the stream of speech that's coming at them, segmenting that stream of speech into individual words so that they can build up a whole picture of what they are hearing. I wanted to ask you, does that dichotomy make sense? Like, are those the two ways that students understand things that they're listening to?
Yeah, I think the notion that it's a dichotomy is slightly problematic, because I think the top-down and bottom-up skills interact and are in some ways inseparable from each other in the way they function, although they are different. So top-down skills is things like predicting what it's going to be about, using context to, I mean, we do this without even, we don't consciously think, oh, I'm going to predict. I know that I'm going to listen to something, so I already kind of know that, well, the context, this person's talking, this is what they're talking about. So I've already got 50% of the meaning from the context. Now I just need a few words to fill it in, to fill in the whole meaning. So that's the top down. Of course, the bottom up is actually catching those words and getting the gist and perhaps a bit of nuance about what the orientation to the topic is in the speaker's speech. So it's an interpretive process which involves drawing on both of those. I mean, an example I think I give in the book is when I was flying into Singapore some years ago now, and I was reading one of those forensic detective science books, you know, where there's body parts and all this kind of stuff. And as I was flying in, I was trying to get to the end of the book because it's a 10-hour flight from New Zealand. And I just heard this announcement over the intercom, please put your body parts in your passport. I thought, what? Put your body parts in your passport? And it took me a kind of a few seconds to realize, oh, boarding pass. Put your boarding pass in your passport. So what's going on there, right? So the top down is that my orientation is towards forensic perspectives on bodies. That's the top down. That's given me a kind of a frame of reference. And I'm interpreting through that frame. But then bottom up, I've got this speech stream coming at me, and it gets filtered through this frame, and I hear body parts, and I have to take a few seconds to think, oh, boarding pass. And so that's an example of the top down and the bottom up working together, both working off each other.
And Jonathan, in your experience, do teachers tend to teach top down skills more than bottom up skills? And is there one which it's more important to teach, or is it really more about finding a balance of doing both in class?
I think teachers have, for the last few decades, overemphasized developing top-down skills. Okay, you know, here's the title for something we're going to listen to. Guess what it's about. Guess what you might find. Listen for the keywords. Answer a few questions. Without really helping learners to develop those lexical segmentation skills, they need to really kind of process the speech stream at a level which is going to serve them in the future. So I think that we've sort of copped out a bit because the lexical segmentation skills just seem to be too technical and too difficult. So we'll just do the easy stuff, the top-down guesswork, and hope for the best. And I think that approach came out of the communicative language teaching approach, which tended to reject a focus on learning aspects of the system at a very explicit level. And I think that has been to the disadvantage of language learners for a few decades. I think, you know, we really needed balance, and that balance is coming in now with a lot of scholars saying that we need to spend a lot more time helping learners to develop lexical segmentation skills, because that's where the rubber meets the road.
And that's really interesting. Can you tell us even more about that, Jonathan? I mean, what do you think teachers can do to focus on lexical segmentation when they're doing a listening exercise? And as you said, I think it's relatively easy for teachers, you know, the beginning of a listening to say, look at this picture, guess what these people are going to talk about. And then afterwards say, okay, compare what they actually said to what you thought they were going to say. But I think the bottom-up skills seem a lot more complicated for teachers to teach. So can you tell us a bit more about how teachers can actually do that?
I think it's becoming aware of some of the processes in English, like elision. But, you know, I can't help it. I can't help it. So what happened there? What happened to the plosive T in can't? Can't help it. Helping learners develop awareness of these kind of phenomena in English. It's probably worth sort of noting that we as infants became very skilled at segmenting speech in our first language in our first weeks of life. We only have to hear clusters of phonemes together a few times to segment that in the speech stream. And in fact, recent research shows that even dogs can do this. And dogs can learn up to 200 words. And largely they think it's through the same process of recognizing these syllables that co-occur together somewhat frequently. You know, sit down, stand up, get the ball, whatever it might be. So all of us as language learners of our first language become experts in the phonology of our language by about, you know, 7 months or so. And that's well before we've developed lexical knowledge. So before we even know what the words mean, we're parsing the speech stream. We're recognizing where the boundaries are. Just through this process of pattern detection, which is extraordinary in the human brain. The reason I'm saying that is the problem, of course, is that that sets up a certain form of pattern detection, which suits our first language. But if we try to map that onto the second language, things fall apart because languages segment the speech stream in different ways. You know, in French and English is a classic example. I think one of our jobs as language teachers is to give learners opportunities to retune their perceptual apparatus, so that it is able to parse the speech stream, it just pick up those segmental patterns in the speech stream in the second language. Because the first language intuitive basis for doing that doesn't necessarily apply to the second.
So that was bottom-up skills. Can you tell us more about teaching top-down skills, Jonathan? What are some of the most important top-down skills that students need to learn? And is there a way of combining the top-down and bottom-up skills when teachers do listening activities? How can teachers bring those two sets of skills and strategies together for students?
I'm not sure if it's a skill, but I think tolerating ambiguity is a perspective that learners who may be fixated through their education and may have learned to fixate on words in a sequential way. I think tolerance of ambiguity and actually tolerating not being able to understand 80% of what I'm hearing, but being able to pick up a few things to start with and managing the frustration that's involved there would be a first step from a top-down perspective. Having said that, I think one of the problems is that learners are too often faced with listening input, which is way beyond their level. It's too many unfamiliar words. You know, so I think that's just an exercise in frustration. But we know from our own experience, I'm sure yours as well as mine, that you can know all the words in a passage that you're listening to and only understand part of it because you know, all these processes of the way words join together in spoken language just kind of, whoa, what was that that just went through my ears? You know, no idea. So I think even with known language, we've got a hell of a job to do. And so I think we really punish our learners if we're giving them things to listen to where they're not on top of the vocabulary that's in it. We're just doubling or tripling the learning burden if the words are unfamiliar and the speech processing job is also really challenging. So principle there is give learners things to listen to that they can understand to a reasonable level. I think a way of coming back to your question and relating it to top-down and bottom-up is drawing on the work of Christine Goh and Larry Vandergriff is a metacognitive listening process whereby you start with some sort of metacognitive thinking about strategies and how you're going to listen, you know, and just reminding learners of some principles. Then there's a piece of listening And then there's a process of sort of talking or reflecting on what you didn't understand in the listening. So this is getting learners to manage their listening processes and identify what was going on there in my struggles with the listening. You know, why am I struggling? And getting them to sort of recognize what it is that's hard and where they fell apart and why they fell apart. And then listen again. So now they're listening a second time and they're kind of a bit more aware of, okay, I know what was really challenging me. I'm going to focus on that this time. And then again, another discussion about, well, what did you pick up and what did you notice this time? And then going around that cycle as many times as you want to get into the listening experience in a deeper way and to become more aware of yourself as a listener and as a learner developing your listening skills.
Now, clearly, students already have a lot of top-down listening skills from their first language. Obviously, all of us all the time when we're listening to things or talking to people, we're always predicting what's going to be said. So what stops students from using those top-down skills that they already have from their first language in their second language? And what do you think of the argument that students can just use the listening skills that they've developed in their first language and apply them when they're listening in their second language?
I think the key here is that the formal education system, schooling, is focused on literacy, you know, reading and writing. When you get to school, you're already an accomplished listener and speaker. So there's no pedagogy in school to help you listen better. So listening is just taken for granted. It's just something you bring along with you to school, and school gets you stuck into literacy, reading and writing and content knowledge across a range of subjects. So when we come to listening in a second language, suddenly that intuitive skill that we just took for granted, it's just not there. So what do? Do you just treat it like, well, they'll just naturally, magically acquire it just the way they acquired listening in the first language? I'll just give them lots of, I don't know, what, listening? Yeah, it's not going to work very well. It's not efficient. I mean, yes, you could just spend hours and hours and hours and hours listening, and that's great. Listening, you know, you need a ton of listening to listen in a second language. But nevertheless, we can certainly help the process, as with all language learning, by shortcutting that very long naturalistic process with some conscious strategies, you know, and things like tolerate some ambiguity. So we're going to do some listening. You won't understand everything, but just listen for two or three key ideas: who, what, where, when. See what you can find and what you listen to that can answer some of those questions. Or listen to a weather forecast and just see if you can listen for temperature words or something, whatever it might be. So you're getting learners to tolerate ambiguity and just to focus their listening on one or two key things. So what you're doing there is you're developing in learners listening flexibility, that listening isn't only a sound-by-sound construction of the message. You know, naive listeners will come to learning English in that approach of sound by sound by sound by sound. Whereas if you actually do that pre-listening work of predicting and guessing, think of what are some of the key words you're going to find here, what do you think it's about, et cetera, et cetera, and then listen. So you're starting to give learners an awareness that they can bring to the listening activity some of their own ideas and some of their own knowledge, which will help with listening. I began by saying that listening is an interactive process, right? And I think learners think of it as completely one way. I'm just sitting here absorbing information. But no, you're not. You're constructing a message from what you hear. And you're constructing it on the basis of knowing who it is that's talking, what they're talking about. You're interpreting meanings all the way along.
Finally, Jonathan, can you tell us about how teaching students top-down strategies can help them engage more in a text, and how teaching top-down skills can be more interesting and fun and engaging than the sort of traditional listen to this and then answer the comprehension questions?
I think it's that process of engaging with the topic and guessing and predicting is really sort of a rich process of engaging with sense making. And it involves learners thinking creatively and not being just at the mercy of the speech stream. So, you know, it gets them doing a little bit of group work or sort of coming up with some ideas, you know, creativity. And it gets them engaged because now they've got a position that they can reference against what they listen to. So again, it's ownership of what they're doing more than just listening passively and trying to extract a message from the speech stream.
One more time, everyone, that was Jonathan Newton. For more from Jonathan, click on the link in the show notes. For more from us, go to our website, www.tefltraininginstitute.com. If you'd like to support the show, remember, you can click on the link in the show notes to buy us a coffee, or you can write us a positive review wherever you listen, or you can just share this episode with a friend. Thanks again for listening. We'll see you again next time. Goodbye.